Coming up next on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show, a.k.a. Al Lundell and Mrs. Future over here at the controls.
At the controls with lots of help.
Looking over our shoulder.
With Billy and Sam in, part of our tech party. You know, just so that everything can work properly for our show today.
That's right.
Because I want to tell you, you know, so much dismal news lately. Really, it's really hard not to feel that.
And yeah, is there more stress and strain in the world, or are we just hearing about it more, or a little of both?
Just to help things along, I have a few really great stories from our neck of the woods. Things that at least some of us are fortunate enough not to have to be in a dismal state and can bring through some interesting news that will help relieve the suffering a little bit.
Yeah, let's balance it out a little bit, people. We have lots to be sad about, but let's not forget that there's lots to be hopeful about, too.
So here we go with the hope. Starting with, there's a piece from England, BBC. It's called Bringing People Back from the Dead. There's hope.
Oh, now that's really hopeful. Oh, come on.
No, well, really, this is important. No, because you can, you see. The interesting thing about this is that it turns out that using lower temperatures during a cardiac arrest or afterwards, in that time, lowering the temperature of the body seems to really help in being able to revive the body much later, like 45 minutes to 3 or 4 hours later. So temperature is a key part of the process of being able to resuscitate later.
Well, I hate to be cynical here, but we are meat bodies after all. So, you know,
well,
keeping things cool.
Well, it's a fabulous biotech machine at the very least.
Yes, indeed.
You know, still, you know, what's interesting is that the brain has a sleep mode. Like when it's in serious trauma, it can go to sleep. And in that state, it uses less blood, and so it gets colder and lasts longer.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep mode is good in traumatic situations. So that's interesting news, I think, that can help reduce a little bit of pain that we may all some point face. Anyway, check the details in that article.
Okay, so doctors are cooling down the body intentionally with the hope of being able to revive it later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, this is the Dr. Future Show, and it is Tuesday, May 7th, 2013, and we are full of all kinds of fascinating information.
Like Paul Hellyer's thing.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? It's very interesting. It's a bombshell dropped.
Right.
And there's hardly a whimper in mainstream media anywhere.
Except maybe on the Coast to Coast Network, the 15 million listeners who listen late at night because they want to know the weird news as well as the gritty news. The weird news is that
Paul Hellyer was the former Minister of Defense of Canada, our neighbor.
Right. Minister of Defense. He
covers a lot of territory.
Prime Minister. He was actually a candidate for Prime Minister. He lost against Joe Clark. This former defense minister spent many, many years in the Canadian government integrating the three branches of the Canadian military so that they would be under one command.
The other thing you should know about him is that he's extremely conservative. He'd probably be beyond Rush if he was in this country. He's so conservative that conservatives didn't elect him for their prime minister choice, but he went on to become defense minister.
This gentleman of politics and power in Canada.
Kind of world we like to track here on KSCO, mostly from the American perspective, but we're getting global here.
So he was being interviewed about a week ago in front of a Canadian branch of government that was charged with investigating the truth of
the alien question.
Terrestrial question.
Right. We're not talking Mexico here.
So we're talking about Canadian government hearings about ETs and are they real? What did this former head of defense have to say, Paul Hellyer?
Well, first of all, he said 2% of the data he could not disclose because of secrecy reasons.
And he had a local Bay Area celebrity, one of our very own, Danny Sheehan,
right.
I believe still lives here.
That's what got our attention, is that Danny was sitting there right in front of him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Danny is a lawyer who takes on some pretty high-profile cases involving ethics and morality and abuse of power. He was there.
Mm-hmm. So I suggest you actually listen to it, folks. But let me give you some tag words. ET, species, Zeta Reticuli, Pleiadian, Orion, and tall whites.
Okay. So basically, the things that he disclosed will be fairly familiar to a lot of the late night listeners, a lot of the conspiracy crowd, especially those who are tracking the UFO story.
Yeah, and also military industrial complex ideas, Bilderbergers, cartels, shadow government stuff, ruling elites, Rockefeller,
Colonel
Bush,
Corso.
Philip Corso, and the day after Roswell data. All of that came together by the former Minister of Defense of Canada speaking in a serious governmental board meeting where he's talking about all these things in Canada.
Yeah. This news to this day, and despite how much work there is on the part of people who are pushing for full disclosure, there is just no attention in the media given to the whole extraterrestrial question. I think that there are maybe two schools of non-believers who have control of the airwaves. There's the school who believes that the whole idea of extraterrestrials is a complete hoax cooked up by superpowers.
Well, yeah, you have A to Z
on this. And then there's other people who believe that it doesn't exist, but there is a conspiracy to create a belief that it exists so that, again, the power elites can control the world currency and governments and economy.
Yeah.
And then the third point of view is the people who believe that ETs do exist, have been involved in human evolution for not just decades, but thousands of years, perhaps hundreds of thousands of years, and are actively but secretly involved in our co-evolution. And that there's a number of people who involved with the Disclosure Project who want that story told.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's also the people that believe that we're making them. There was an old Outer Limits episode about that, where the government made some alien race to land so that they could play the people to their advantage.
Right. Yeah. Probably the most interesting thing about Paul Hellyer's testimony is the fact that he spent less time on ETs and that particular part of his analysis than he spent on the world power conspiracy among the various
ruling elite. Alex Jones likes to talk about.
Yeah, and he basically says that all of the his goal, Paul Hellyer's goal, is to get the governments of the world to focus on global warming and on preparing for massive changes in society because of global warming. And he feels that the absolute deafening silence with which these global concerns are being addressed is related to the what he calls the silly banking system of the global power elites and the political system, which is completely related to an inability to settle the disputes around Palestine in the Middle East and a desire to use that dispute to control oil and thus world commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
And really, he believes very passionately that the future generations need to put all of those things aside and get serious about solving our climactic changes and about having a functioning economy that actually values all life, not just a few ruling elites, and solves problems more intelligently.
Hmm. So. Well, I tell you, all these things would just go away, these problems, whether ETs are even real or not, if we had direct experiences, right?
Right.
So
that's the Terence McKenna School. The Terence McKenna School is, if you want to be a scientist about altered states of consciousness where the ETs live, in his testimony.
Yes, there's the inner ETs and the outer ETs, right? And the joke is that they're intimately interconnected, kind of like a Mobius strip loop between the domains of human experience, between awake state and dream space, and that there's a lot going on between the states that include the UFO, ET, all the supernatural stuff, really, when it comes down to it, because it's where anything can be possible.
Well,
you know, and then you can bring that into this reality and make it possible if you have the will and the
I'd say attention. That the,
you know,
big,
so it's very
the religion of science is certainty. right? That is really what people who want a concrete scientific proof of reality are looking for. They want certainty that can be tested, that everyone can agree about, that allows us to have a solid footing for our world. They don't want this kind of woo-woo subjective universe where everybody makes up whatever they want and acts like that's true.
Okay. Okay, here's the easiest thing everyone can grasp on. Is the universe alive or not? If it's alive, then the aliens become obvious.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, then they're really mysterious.
Hmm.
Think about it.
Could you give that a little bit more explanation? Alive versus...
Yeah, because right now we're in a society where basically we're alive. Biological life is alive and everything else isn't.
You mean our belief about life.
Our belief system, what we're taught in school about what biology is, liveness, right?
Uh-huh.
And what we find out from the shamanic worlds is that everything is alive. How could that be true? That's not what we were taught.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And yet, from an experiential point of view, it seems self-evident. But from a rational point of view, it's still not fully making sense yet. I think when it does, that's when things shift really fast.
Because mm-hmm.
then we'll have all the rational intellectual parts of society supporting the idea that it's a living universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything will connect. That's where Google Glass comes in. Anyway, we'll talk about that after the break.
All right, folks. So this is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO, and we do love hearing from you. If you have something you want to contribute to the show, we're at 831-479-1080 on KSCO, your Santa Cruz favorite Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Oh, Flower.
Yes, son?
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind staying in your room tonight while my women's group comes over.
Women's group?
Yeah. So I brought you this copy of the Nag Hammadi.
The Nag Hammadi? Wow! This is like the definitive collection of Coptic Gnostic early Christian scripts. I'm getting upstairs and going to be immersing myself in this all night, son, with this cup of sludge that I've specially prepared.
I have a better coffee you might like to try. My Java Fit.
What's in it?
It's Focus Plus Multivitamin Coffee. It's really good for you.
Let me taste that. Wow, this is imparting a mental clarity and brain boost. I'm beginning to understand Gnosticism in a way that I never have.
I knew it. You should drink this coffee all the time.
Wow, I can understand this stuff. This Java Fit is
gourmet, fair trade, smooth coffee that makes you smarter.
Count me fit.
For more information, go to kscoteam.com. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Before I get into glass and how it's redrawing social boundaries in our society, even as we speak, Mrs. Future is going to give you a few numbers in case you want to interact with us on any of this, these choice little tidbits we're sharing with you.
Absolutely. So we did just talk about our phone number, and we do have someone calling in, so we'll definitely bring them online.
Good.
But for other folks, we have lots of ways to communicate. So we have the classic call-in of AM Live Talk Radio. We are blessed here at KSCO with the always open phone lines, 831-479-1080.
Still live.
And then we also have our Twitter feed open today, so you can send us a message at Dr. Future Show. That's @, which is capital 2, @DrFutureShow. And that will pop up on our little tweet screen, which we're monitoring. So.
And we have some links there on our links page that we're talking about. And if you don't feel like reading those or discussing, riffing off of any of those, feel free.
All right. Hello, Ed in Felton. How are you?
Hi, Ed.
I'm doing well. I'm thankful you two are there. And the woman's name, I don't know your name, but when you mentioned what is his name?
Hellyer, Paul Hellyer.
Hellyer.
Yeah.
You said the very same thing, pretty much in different words, in a more or less emotional kind of way as Alex Jones says, I thought, that's how I interpreted it.
Yes, well, I was actually quoting Paul Hellyer, who was quoting David Rockefeller about his desire to basically organize the tools of power so that the United States government could be used to manipulate the world for the benefit of the ruling elites.
Bless you. My main point is that, you know, I'm 57, and I just recently realized if you guys could explain all you know about Mr. Buckminster Fuller.
There's
a DVD and a book by him documented by Robert Snyder. I'm telling you, it's called Buckminster Fuller. Instead of wasting time buying copious books like I did, one book to zero in on, Buckminster Fuller, an autobiographical monologue scenario. If you guys could just kind of explain to some of us people that never heard of Buckminster Fuller.
Oh, you know,
you
inspired
thank
me
you.
For, oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, bless you guys.
Bless you too. Hey, did you know that the person who was former head of the Buckminster Fuller Institute lives here in Santa Cruz?
That's right. And she posts pretty regular tweets.
Oh, wait a minute. Her husband was head of it, but she was the librarian.
That's right. The archivist.
The
official Buckminster Fuller archivist.
And they both live here.
Took his copious works after his death and organized them into a form that could be accessed by researchers, and those archives are now stored permanently at the Stanford Research Library.
Yeah, she helped make the transfer to Stanford. You're right. Bucky is definitely one of the Renaissance geniuses of our time. And he was just bringing through all kinds of great information about how things work and how the universe is constructed and how all these forces that we're not even playing with, like dynamic tension and creating buildings and different shapes, geometries, they each with their own capabilities for travel or for habitation. Amazing.
Yeah, he was definitely a genius designer and someone who introduced a lot of beautiful concepts for the world, such as the whole idea of spaceship Earth, that we look at our planet as a spaceship and that we look at the resources on this planet as if we were managing them for sustainability for an infinite voyage through space, which is what we are.
Well, it's certainly a lot more fun than a tin ship.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have to build a spaceship and go through space, this is pretty good.
Absolutely. So thanks for that question, Ed. We will definitely dedicate one of our shows to Buckminster Fuller and people who can really give us some juicy understandings to chew on over.
Especially today, because, you know, Bonnie and Tony bring this into the present.
Yeah. Yeah, a few of our links were actually inspired by Bonnie DeVarco's blog today.
That's right.
Yeah. So
tip of the hat to the DeVarcos.
Yes.
Yes, a tip of the hat also to Ray Harryhausen, who was a special effects master. We were brought up with many of his movies, especially if you're a baby boomer. Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, boy, I tell you, these are some really great Saturday afternoon memories for me.
1963.
When I was pretty young.
Yeah, you're 2 years old then.
Well, I didn't see it when I was two, but they were still playing when I was about 8 years old. And I would go down to the local theater on Saturdays.
Did you see The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad?
Yes, I did. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that was a 58 one, so that was a classic when you were a little girl.
I feel like I want to watch them again. I'm going to consult Netflix and see how many of these old classics are in the library there.
So this man was one of the geniuses of creating illusion like that. One of the first of the early masters.
Ray Harryhausen.
Worked with actual physical stuff, you know, like goo and wood and balsa.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't even have green screen for doing composite layers until the 50s. This guy was old school special effects. He shot with miniatures. He kind of like Godzilla type special effects.
Well, you remember today we all poo-poo, oh, it was a rubber suit. I love a rubber suit. But can you imagine having invented the rubber suit? For a while, it was really good. I think a lot of their skills can come across to the digital world. That's a whole show in and of itself. Analog to digital.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the future marching forward. Analog to digital.
So, Ray Harryhausen, maybe there's more special effects will come from what the seeds you planted here for us. Thank you.
Let's hope so. All right. Well, thanks, Ray. You will be missed. Sure. Okay, so what else are we going to talk about here?
Oh, the glass is very interesting.
Oh, Google Glass.
Right now, yeah.
Boy, talk about revolutionary, game-changing technology, right?
Yes, this is seriously affecting the social fabric of our society.
All right, folks. Now, we assume if you've been listening to the show, this is not the first time you're hearing about Google Glass. And if you track the tech publications on the internet and on the radio, you probably have been hearing about it there.
But just Google it, you'll see.
Rollout.
Yeah, it's like Google's doing the eyes, Apple is the pocket right now, and probably the wrist for real estate, for building the future portable machines we'll all be carrying. And the glass version, or the Google Glass, or the computer you'll wear. Now, what's amazing there is that they're very compelling. They superimpose computer reality onto physical reality. Some people facetiously refer to it as Terminator vision. I think that's demeaning it.
Well, I think the official term of those who are in the field is augmented reality, sometimes called AR.
Yes, that's better.
Yes, and there are, I think for the last 3 years or so, there have been conferences here in Silicon Valley dedicated to augmented reality.
Yes, but it's not quite augmented.
It's the software that is creating the ability for you to see computer data while you're looking at
superimpose it on physical matter reality.
Right.
Now, what's wrong with that? Other than being distracted enough to accidentally kill yourself or others. Other than that.
Why do you say there's anything wrong with
that? Because accidents can happen when you're distracted. Distraction's a big issue. And the fact is, though, is that our consciousness is shifting. Short attention span theater is more the norm these days, wouldn't you say? And so society shifts to reflect that.
Well, okay, let's see. For here, we've thrown out the word Google Glass. We've barely described what it does, and we spent all this time telling people to be very afraid.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. It's not. It's just that naturally the human mind goes to the cautionary tale, probably because then we can avoid it.
Right.
Talk about it, then we can. But you should really get the idea of what it can do for you from a positive perspective before we completely get afraid of it.
That's right. And so the link that we have today to lead this discussion asks the question, does Google Glass violate community standards?
That's a leading question. What it does is that it's glass. It makes things transparent. It has cameras in it. Instead of being in your pocket, the cameras are now on your eyeglasses. Get this. They're not just cameras, but they're on all the time, or they can be. And that's where privacy as we know it goes away.
Yes. The whole idea of Google Glass is that it moves us one step closer to having the data universe integrated with the real world. And it puts that computer layer in front of us all the time and gives us new gestures to interact with the data universe that maybe will get in the way of things that we're doing, such as driving.
Yes, but it's glass. It's clear. It makes things transparent. It makes them clearer. It's acid for the cybernetic part of our brains.
You mean it accelerates your brain to process things in a new way?
Well, we already are processing 5 senses simultaneously right now. It's a massive amount of data pouring into our neural networks. Mm-hmm. Right now, for all of us, every second.
That's right.
This is still relatively trivial compared to that amount of data, you know, from our technology. But our technology wants to be part of that feed to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do everything we can to make that our inventions connect with our nervous system so that we can be more.
Right.
You know, we can evolve.
Yes, that's why we make
that's
tools.
The force. That's why the kids love the computers and everything. I think it's biologically driven. I don't think it's out of control in terms of any elite boys club running it. So that the imbuing of the technology into who we are intimately every moment is happening.
And well, I think it's a very interesting question about, okay, in the words of one of my favorite wise people, every time something new is invented, it is threatening to the current world. I mean, when computers first came out, there were a lot of people who were afraid that we would somehow lose something in our humanity.
Well, the beauty here is that it's something everyone can try. It's not just some elite toy. Mm-hmm. Right? The fact is that the Raspberry Pi is $35. And it's HDMI, connects to a large screen, full-blown Linux-based open-source computer. You can do Netflix. You can surf the net, all those things.
So you're talking about the basic access to the computer world.
So the basic access essentially goes to every living human being.
Money is not the limitation.
Yeah, right.
However, a desire to learn is the limitation. Like, there has to be a person willing to speak the language of the machine in order to become part of.
Well, the kids, they're learning languages. They naturally learn the language of what's cool and special and, you know, really will get their attention. And so our machines get their attention more than us sometimes.
But what is
that's
so
because it is us.
Intriguing, yeah. I think, to people about machines is that people like having special powers. People like being able to do things that other people can't do. That there's a certain built-in fascination with knowing secrets, with knowing magic tricks, with being able to impress people by things that you know that they don't. Like, there's just something inherent in human nature that is enhanced by these tools. And the more that we create tools that extend our grasp, the more we create a gap between people who don't
haven't experienced those tools
and don't experience them and aren't familiar with them.
Well, that's always the case.
And
that's
the
always,
people who are very conversant.
But we're Californians, you know. We're next to Silicon Valley. We are at the font of creation itself for this whole phenomenon. We are part of Silicon Beach. A lot of the wizards of Silicon Valley live here.
Right. Let's get back to Google Glass and what is so scary to people about
Google. Well, I know. I don't want to just look at what's scary about it. Let's really look at what it can do for us.
Okay.
I mean,
can it do for us?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to look at the cautionary tales, but don't sell yourself short. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Oh,
no.
Never.
I know the public's that we're always told that audiences are fascinated with the problems that things are, that what could go wrong. I think that's good to discuss that, but I think it's important to really look at what it's worthy of.
So are you a proponent of Google Glasses for everyone?
Well, I think we should try that on. For sure. See where it takes us. We can do it in our imaginations initially. We can do it on talk shows.
We were having a little bit of a fun conversation on the way down here about the idea that all of this controversy about Google Glass, where certain communities are being stimulated to try and legislate against them and ban them.
Well, that's what's happening, right? Because people are going on with them on into bars and theaters and places where you're not supposed to have any recording equipment.
Right.
Right. That's just one of the things they do. You could say that they're a sixth sense or seventh sense.
You could indeed. All right, folks. Well, we're the Dr. Future Show.
Everything will be perfect.
And
just
we will
breathe.
Back in a couple of minutes. So stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We were just talking about how Google Glass was getting banned in some places. One is a Seattle dive bar called the Five Point Cafe. Its owner, Dave Marinette, said that Five Point was kind of a private place. And according to the New York Times, that may have been the first glass banner. And also your hometown, Mrs. Future, Sin City.
Las Vegas.
Yes.
Yes, born and raised and fifth generation.
What's their attitude towards glass?
According to this article, this is the what stays in Vegas quote. Right? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So I guess it's still the school of you like to have secrets and you don't like people to know what your secrets are.
It's a, Google Glass, it's got a recording device in it, then it's a camera, it's banned. It's the way it is.
That's right. Yeah, the casinos consider it just another
camera. Forget
another
it.
Device for cheating.
I don't care if you think it's a sense. It's a camera.
Well, this is going to be very interesting to see 20 years from now if there is going to be such a thing as even enforceability.
It's impossible. The way it'll happen is through the handicapped. Like people who absolutely have their eyes as digital eyes or people with ears. They have to have them. And they're allowed to record to their memory, right? Yes. So it'll start there and it'll spread. It'll be so great because the handicapped will have 1,000 times better memory than any of the rest of us that everyone will go there. And then that's it. So I see no future in trying to ban it.
This is really kind of Borg logic. You will be assimilated.
Yeah. Yeah,
existence is futile.
It is. It's like, that's why you're listening to a radio time. The whole idea of tool making itself, it's its lineage. It's where it comes from.
Right.
And we're always going to do that.
Yeah. And it's so funny that when you really push your vision towards the future and what is humanity going to look like in 1,000 years?
Well, like
what
the
is
past
going to look like in 10,000 years.
Forces that push us.
There are scales where we cross thresholds and then we're no longer recognizable, right? Where we start off as one kind of thing and then we evolve and we evolve and we evolve in slow increments. And then we look at it again and we're just completely different creatures. And that is life.
Yeah. Like if we tried to live as a normal person 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We'd be serious aliens.
That's right. I mean, for the last 100 years, transportation has been the hot new technology where we've been going faster and faster and faster. So that
it'll be interesting next week when we're in Austria and we'll be transmitting to you guys to see what the difference is. And that's a fairly sophisticated country, but we're still the cutting edge here in California for all this stuff. For consciousness and technology and coming together.
Right. Trying to marry the best of human potential with the best of human created potential. Right. So we want to refine the gifts of our animal nature and our heritage and our culture. And we want to bring those forward with us as we accelerate our capabilities and as we include more and more data and more memory and more speed in all of our processes. And as we include more social integration, I'd say a lot of people on the cutting edge of consciousness and technology are acknowledging that individuals can't function in the modern world. We need teams of people to collaborate. We need lots of individuals to bring their individuated expertise and skills together so that something larger than any individual can be accomplished. And that's just built into the nature of having an info universe and a web accelerated world.
Well, that's why I think that the internet is a nervous system, because it's empowering us to do stuff on a larger scale. Like there's a story this week of how the 3D printers are now going to be at Staples, something we've been talking about for a while. It's just hit mainstream consumer consciousness to have it in places like Staples for the first time.
Right.
So that's just happening now. And now this week I've just got a piece up on our links page about a printable bionic ear that melds electronics and biology. So you see the future is in the blueprint here already. You want a spare part for your body, you'll just print it and it'll be at home. It's really obvious. It's going really quickly into that kind of level of creation. Of course we want that. Of course we want spare parts. Of course we want to live healthy for a long time, if not forever, and be able to play with that. So I'm not at all worried about the future in terms of our survival because we have these strong instincts.
And so do you think that the path of transition can be made easier for everybody who grew up in a different normality?
I think it's really easy. I think it's following your bliss, as Joseph Campbell said, and it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be as obsessive about technology as me. And I have friends who don't drive in the Santa Cruz community. I have some friends who are serious non-tech people. It's okay, because I think tuning into nature is probably the most important thing. And,
Shall we hear from Hazel in Aptos?
Sure.
Hello, Hazel. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because I had heard, and this has been some time ago, someone talking on the radio about, when you hook up your computer to Wi-Fi?
Wi-Fi, yeah.
Yeah. And he was talking about one, I don't even remember what it was now, but it was so easy and so simple. It was like $15 a month, and it wasn't a big one like AT&T or Comcast or that. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that type of thing?
Are we talking about the Wi-Fi bandwidth in your house or connected to the outside world?
It was connecting to the outside world.
Yeah. Well, the big thing there is called Google Fiber. That's probably the biggest thing. And that's where you get not just a little bit more bandwidth, but you get like 1,000 times more bandwidth than you have now.
Mm-hmm.
And for $70 a month.
Hazel, could you turn off your radio or turn it down?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have my, but I got a TV on.
Yeah. And we talked about that quite a bit and Google's plans to take over that world over the next 5 years. Meanwhile, there's a lot of smaller regional companies that provide you with bandwidth. In Santa Cruz, Cruise.io is pretty famous.
No, this was one because the person that was talking was in San Francisco in the area up there. And you could go anywhere, though, and get this. And he said, just call them up and get yourself hooked up through them because it was just great. And that station is no longer around or whatever it is going on with it. So I said, maybe you have heard of it. They said, talk to Dr. Future. You were on right now.
Okay. Well, let's see. Wireless, you're talking about just like a little receiver that picks up wireless bandwidth to your computer. So you don't need to assign, have a wire put into your house for it.
It's one of these that you can just go on the computer and go.
Okay, well, here's the thing that comes to mind. The iPads with, you know, with LTE, that's completely wireless. You don't need Wi-Fi in the house. You just have AT&T wireless service through your iPad. And that can do the phone, that can do your internet, that can do everything in one device. Pretty
okay, and so how do I do that?
Well, go to the Apple Store and take a look at the iPad and see what you think.
Okay, but the kids just gave me a tablet. They informed me it's a tablet.
Okay,
and it's not iPad. It's
Android Galaxy.
It's an Android.
Well, there's a zillion versions. So there's Nexus 7 is probably the most famous. It's 7-inch, Samsung. Everybody's got a tablet computer. But they're mostly Android or Windows, and they have Wi-Fi. They all have Wi-Fi. And quite a few of them may have, especially the ones that AT&T or Sprint sell, may have some capability there. I don't know. I'm not an expert on the connectivity of the Androids. Maybe somebody in the audience could call in and let us know that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your help.
Sure. Good luck.
Have a nice day.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's see. It sounds like Hazel has just gotten her very first connectivity device to me. And she's probably wondering about some of the stuff we've been covering lately, like the Google Cloud.
Right, yeah. Right. That's good to remember that a lot of people are connecting for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it used to be for a long time you had to get something over your phone line, like DSL. A lot of people still probably have that because that's cheaper. Then the other source of bandwidth into the house is over your mobile device or your iPad or I don't know if any Androids are supported by AT&T or Sprint, but that's a good question. But if so, then by those devices.
Hmm.
Chances are it's Wi-Fi and you have to have a Wi-Fi hotspot. Most tablets, including Apple tablets, are like that unless you get the special AT&T Sprint ones.
Okay, so let me just decode it a little bit, if I'm understanding what you're saying, that when it comes to plugging into the internet with your mobile device, you have two avenues of doing that. One is through the computer network, which is a Wi-Fi network that comes in through some kind of computer hookup.
Well, usually through the phone line or through the cable, like Comcast.
Right, but it's still meant to be a internet connection through that cable, as opposed to the other way of getting it is your telephone connection, which is that's like your
AT&T
wireless phone. If you're out with your wireless phone and you use your phone to get a connection, you're using the cellular service, which is originally designed for phone calls and not internet, and it only gives you a very tiny straw for your
internet. The cellular is faster now than just about any.
The
LTE on AT&T is phenomenal in Santa Cruz. I don't know if you've tried that. I've gotten like 20 up and down. You know, I mean, it's amazing. It's way better than just about anything. The only problem with AT&T is that they don't give you an all-you-can-eat plan. You only get so much bandwidth unless you're grandfathered in from being one of the first ones to have a bandwidth plan.
So I've always had in my mind that you're paying the phone company for a cellular connection to your data that you don't have to pay for if you're at home and you've got your computer connection set up, right?
Yeah, if you're on a Wi-Fi network at home, it's a better deal than trying to use cellular Wi-Fi type connections.
Right.
Yeah, they charge the most. They have the most expensive toll roads for data is the cell phone companies.
Right.
Because they're used to that. That's where they came from a world where it was more expensive.
And Comcast, I'm not sure of their current data plan, but I know originally they started off where they would sell you a monthly subscription service for data in your home, and then they would cap it off, and they would only let you have so much.
Well, the good thing about Comcast is that it's a pretty high cap. It's like 250 gigabytes, which is a lot. I mean, you'll maybe get 25 on other plans. So,
well, like when you buy a cellular plan through AT&T, you're paying, you know, you have to pay for every gigabyte, every single gigabyte.
Yeah, especially when we're going overseas. We're going to Italy next week, or Austria, then Italy. It'll be really interesting to see what the rates are.
Right.
Anyway, I did have a lot of other stories, but our guest is here also. Check our links for the stories really quickly. The 3D printers are going more and more into printing biological parts, and that's going to continue to evolve. And as we all get more bandwidth to the home, we'll have 3D printers that print spare parts for not just our stuff, but for us. Okay, and it's rapidly heading in that direction. There's a little piece I have on a new type of energy harvester that looks like a little button battery, but it generates power, and it can be used instead of button batteries. And they're going to start selling them this summer. There's also some stories that I have on a quantum internet, which is a leap beyond the existing infrastructure for our telecommunications even. That's a big topic. We'll probably go more into depth ourselves with that. And there's a government lab that has one for 2 years now, a quantum internet for 2 years. There's a very interesting piece on that. And I have a medical section as well about breakthroughs in diabetes and making glowing plants yourself.
All right, so we have about 45 seconds, and we've got a caller who waited till the very last second. Do you want to say hi? All right.
Also, in a way of magnetic imaging living cells instead, you know, really tiny 3D imaging of cells.
Anyway, folks, it's really an amazing lineup of links that Dr. Future puts together for us every week so that we have a really ahead of the curve view of what's ahead in medicine and science and technology.
And next is Lars Ling. Our guest today is a Swedish expert on clean technology, and Sweden being one of the forefront of the countries in the world doing such things.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very interesting next half hour where we look at future green tech next hour. We'll be back after the news. This is KSEO Santa Cruz, Dr. Future Show.
Till then.
Coming up next on KSEO, hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. In the spirit of cross-pollinating our ideas and technology, we have in the studio with us Lars Ling, who's the CEO and founder of Cleantech Region. And he brought a magazine called Green Solutions from Sweden, the hottest 50 companies that will change the world in Sweden. Now, Lars, tell us a little bit about why you're here in this country. Welcome to our show, first of all.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Yeah.
I'm here on a mission. First of all, to learn about the U.S. market, learn experiences, how about it works on the sustainability side, building network and finding business opportunities, projects and partners.
Mm-hmm. So you're bringing a lot of information coming from your country in Sweden here to do some product collaboration, joint ventures, if you will, or just the cross-pollination of information?
Both. I met with a guy, Sheridan Tatsuno, this morning. Mm. At the university. And,
yes, we know Sheridan. He's a local filmmaker.
He's an amazing guy. I didn't want to leave.
I know the feeling. He's very magnetic, really creative.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful fellow.
We like each other a lot on Facebook, too.
He's very active on Facebook.
Yeah.
But practically, that's why I'm here. Cleantech Region is a promoter and matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So helping the best Swedish clean tech technology companies find projects, partners, customers, and capital.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, what's been going on in Sweden in terms of environmental technology? You know, we're talking about clean tech. Let's define that, first of all. What do you mean by clean tech?
It's a very good question. We have a big learning curve, learning moment to do. Clean tech, mm-hmm. practically clean technologies, all product services that is better for the environment and for you. And it's defined in a number of areas.
You mean less pollution, like gasoline engines wouldn't qualify?
Practically all businesses. It's defined by 11 areas, mm-hmm. like renewables. And renewables, you would have solar. Mm-hmm. Like you have in your house.
Like what Obama likes to call clean coal. Well, is there such a thing?
Well, that's maybe a workaround.
Yeah, you think?
that's a little bit of greenwashing, isn't it?
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. greenwashing. See.
Yeah. Everybody wants to be sustainable, but it's more of a wish, a perception where they want to be. But,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
So can green. Yeah. What is the criteria for
how can you tell
considering
what's
it green, good. Clean tech?
General terms, clean tech globally is very broad. Like EU is defining it as all products and services that is better for the environment, both mm-hmm. products and services, is considered to be clean tech.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it will be green building, logistics, transports, it will be renewables, water solutions, waste, all areas considered to be clean tech.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were having a debate here in our community about desalinization of the seawater.
Yeah.
Has Sweden worked on that kind of issue at all? Is that?
We're very fortunate in Sweden.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of clean
water. Right, you're in the Arctic. So
yeah. Yeah. So not much at all. Mm. I lived there many years in Australia, and they have a challenge with that. So they started very late in Sydney, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're bringing in the Israelis, which is supposed to be one of the best in the world in terms of decent.
Desalinization.
Yeah,
desalination.
Tough word.
So you think it can be clean as a technology?
Absolutely, it can. Challenges with desalination is it also uses a lot of energy.
Yeah. Mm.
So you need to develop that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely works, and the technology is really moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can see, what you can do more with seawater today is a project I met in Santa Barbara the other day, the managing director for Enterprise Honolulu,
mm-hmm.
Mark McCuffey. He was presenting at the Sustainability Center.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic center.
What's he doing?
He was there talking about sustainable tourism and also having the projects in Hawaii in terms of sustainable projects and developing the islands. They're working now with a Swedish company who is actually taking cold seawater from the sea. And the plan is to cool whole Honolulu.
Hmm.
That's really awesome. And the challenge is in California for all cities. This should be an opportunity as well. How you're looking at cooling the cities based on seawater.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's cold at the bottom of the sea and you take the cold air up as an air conditioning kind of
correct.
Thing? So it's kind of a thermal exchange system.
Yeah, you can say. You're just taking the cooling from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
From the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Since cooling takes six times more energy than heating. That's why it's so important. Cooling takes 6 times more energy.
Right. I can't use it on my solar panels, that's for sure. It still takes a lot of power to run an air conditioner.
Right.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Mm-hmm. But that's why also when you talk about green buildings, you need to build more well-insulated houses.
Mm-hmm.
It's even more important in hotter climate.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you need use less cooling
in
when it's hot. And since cooling takes 6 times more energy,
mm-hmm.
and when it's really cold outside, you need less energy to heat your house.
Interesting. Sure. So part of the goal is a holistic goal of sort of what's the most appropriate technology for the overall energy use, right?
It depends on where you live.
Have you been in Sweden?
No.
The airport. Half my relatives are from Sweden, but I would like to visit.
If you'll come there, you're invited.
I've been to Russia.
Here now, you're invited to Sweden.
Oh, thank you.
Great, thanks.
It's very cold.
Okay, we'll bring our long sleeves.
We'll bring it. Come in July.
So hence the experience of building really well-insulated houses.
Yeah.
With that, Sweden are very good at putting things like district heating, where you actually have centers where you actually are sending out energy or hot water in piping systems. So you're actually heating houses, district heating.
So where is the heating coming from, whether originally that you're distributing?
You have like certain power plants that today are actually burning waste.
You mean electrical power plants that are generating AC current?
Some of them are also doing. But in Sweden, it's water.
You're heating water.
No, not water. We have to electricity. We're having water.
Hydroelectric.
Hydroelectric.
It says you have a lot of hydroelectric in Sweden.
We have a lot of hydro.
So you have a lot of water.
A lot of water.
Okay, and they generate heat just by turning the turbines. Is that where the heat comes from?
On hydro, they produce electricity.
Yeah, they do.
Talk about district heating. You have like power plants. We're using, well, some of them have a little bit of oil, but most of them are actually 100% renewables. Where you're looking on bioenergy, like rest products from the forest industry, and waste.
Hmm. And use it, so you distribute the heat, so none of it's wasted, like we would hear. I mean, I've heard that, like, you'll take excess heat from one environment and put it into another, like from the lights, you know, or I guess what are the causes of excess heat? Subway systems, they need heat, right? They need to be delivered. I'm just kind of curious as to how you redistribute heat in a city.
One of the best examples in the industry is in Sundsvall, where I live, where we have the forest industry, the big pulp and paper companies. Excess heat from that industry actually goes back to the power plant and gets distributed into the district heating. Huh. And, you know, before it was going directly out to sea.
Hmm. So it was being wasted, and someone realized that it would be better to harness it and redirect it to a different industry.
Yeah, correct.
And when did that happen?
Well, it's been in steps, but now is a new, the latest project, which means it's the power plant in Sundsvall will be almost 100% renewables. And there is a new project together with the Swedish pulp company SCA, which has its base in Sundsvall. This is maybe one of the companies in Sweden that has sort of improved their production and their industrial environment by being better in all steps in how they are processing, so minimizing energy consumption and being more productive in all processes to actually produce paper and pulp and forestry products.
Mm-hmm. I see. So what are the big industries in Sweden? Are they forestry products everywhere? Is that one of the main exports for Sweden, or chocolate, or in terms of the economy there, what kinds of clean tech problems are most important?
Well, I should say ABBA, right?
ABBA. The greatest Swedish import is ABBA.
The music industry has been phenomenal, but the traditional, and as I said, Sweden is a nature-based high-tech society, the forestry and the mines, you know, Swedish steel, and still is. Then the industry for, you know, all kind of productions, car manufacturing. Now that is leaving Sweden as well. Saab is leaving, Volvo is Chinese.
How about IKEA? Are they going to stay?
IKEA going to stay.
Okay.
We'll still be getting nice designs for our furniture out of Sweden, huh?
IKEA's great.
Tell us about them. Tell us about, are they doing anything that's pretty interesting in the clean tech world?
They are one of the most progressive companies investing in clean tech. I think in the United States, all their shops or houses where the shops is now on solar.
Really?
Yeah.
In Sweden?
Yeah. So they invested a lot in the United States.
In the United States, too.
Yeah. That's one of the largest projects. Also, if you're looking on how much they invested in about 12 million euros now.
12 million? Really?
Yeah. That is one of their, they are not only doing it themselves in their own shops, they are also now setting up a venture or an investment company where they're also investing in green technologies to really enhance that. Because we need to sort of speed up the development and implement green technologies.
You know, I want us to talk about that need to speed up. We'll have a little more time for that after we go to a break.
Talking to Lars Ling on clean tech
on the Dr. Future show. So stay tuned.
Future emerging now. Dr. and Mrs. Future experiment with longevity product, Java Fit.
It goes with the idea that coffee is good for you.
Really thrilled about
Java Fit Focus Plus multivitamin coffee, which gives you mental clarity, neural support, and brain boost, as well as being awesome tasting coffee.
Connie, do you want to try it before going to the movies tonight?
Sure.
We're going to make some Java Fit Focus.
Staying awake at the movie tonight. Yum.
Okay, it's now after the movie. We have some results regarding
our JavaFit coffee. Connie, did it actually help you stay awake?
This did the job.
I have to jolt her with my elbow and check that she's still awake. And she was awake. What's up with that?
Well, it must have been that JavaFit.
See, it does what it's supposed to do. It's caffeine plus.
It's the future.
For more information, go to KSCOteam.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Lars Ling, visiting from Sweden, who's very focused on the cross-pollination of information about clean tech globally. You were just telling us, Lars, about how you got into this. Yeah, can you tell us that story?
Oh, yeah. It's my background is sports and IT, and from 2006, I went to, or seven, to Chicago with a business delegation from mid-Sweden. It was about 40 companies to the entrepreneurial days, and discovering and see the demand and requirement and questions about energy efficient solutions. That sort of was the start.
And that got your attention. You're busy tracking sports, and then suddenly you're thinking about energy efficient solutions to the human condition.
Yeah, it's practically the most important and the biggest challenge and opportunity as well we're facing.
Yeah. So what was the first thing you got involved with along those lines after that?
My great mentor, Anders Nyquist, he's a Swedish architect who is really, I met him first 2006. He's sort of my big role model. He's into green building, eco-cycle design, which is a structured method, how you actually build and construct a smart, sustainable society. It's not just drawing a house. You're looking at all the aspects. You're looking on the ecological.
Yeah. It's like a whole ecosystem.
Yeah, it's a holistic structure.
Right. There's things coming in, leaving. It's almost like an organism in a way.
Well, we are, and we're all connected, and it starts with us as individuals. That's where I say it's important that everything with sustainability, where it's us people who are the pillars, foundation, and now you see all this with social innovation. People are looking on, well, what's the next business models? How are we going to make money? How are we going to continue to have the debt-financed growth? Yeah. Is this going to be continue? And I mean, there's certain challenges with the way we're sort of growing the welfare society today. Yeah. So we have to rethink and change. Yeah. It starts with us. Had the same discussion with Sheridan. So we are thinking and we are capable of taking action. So some kind of cultural people movement.
So what I see you're helping to facilitate here is to build a network of people that care about clean technology and creating a better environment through it.
Absolutely. I have another great mentor is Günter Pauli.
Günter Pauli.
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Günter. And Pauli, P-A-U-L-I.
U-L-I.
Yeah. He's one of the pioneers in this field. He's the founder of Siri, Siri.org, and Blue Economy. Oh. Blue Economy is like biomimicry. You're mimicking the nature. So you want to involve natural solutions into new technology, like the vortex, and the spider web. What can you use that?
We're starting to use the principles of nature in human design.
Correct.
Like sacred geometry?
Yeah, you can do that.
Buckminster Fuller ideas?
Pardon?
Like Buckminster Fuller, you're familiar with Buckminster Fuller's?
No.
Well, there's a little cross-pollination there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because he was an American Renaissance man who thought much about such things in the 60s.
Okay.
And created the geodesic dome. I think that's the most obvious invention of his. He designed dynamic structure, like you see suspension bridge type creations in a home environment, not just for bridges, but he was using suspension for creating buildings that were in trees and things like that.
Yeah, no, it's along those lines. But Günter, he's also...
Blue Economy, here it is.
Yeah.
The Blue Economy, Günter Pauli.
Yeah. Mother Earth is not green. She's blue.
He was the author of the report to the Club of Rome.
Correct. Rome. Okay. Blue economy has been developed also together with the Club of Rome. So with the theory, I think there are 3,500 scientists around the world. They just had their 8th World Congress in Madrid 2 weeks ago. There are really great principles. He's also been looking on, if you're looking on new markets like Bhutan. Today we measure GDP in countries, about Bhutan going gross national happiness. Isn't that what we all should measure?
How happy are you today?
Never been better.
Have you? How do you find Californians generally in terms of that? Happier than the New Yorkers, do you think?
Oh, yeah, you got the sun.
Yeah, you think that makes the difference?
Yeah.
But then, wait a minute, though, but Sweden has less sun than New Yorkers. You should be more miserable than New Yorkers.
Oh, it's never too late to give up. No, we're pretty happy as well. But California is great. California is great. I was a little bit surprised this morning, I must say. This is serious. I've been a couple of times to San Francisco, but I noticed this morning around Union Square and Market Street in the center, there's a lot more homeless on the streets in San Francisco.
Than last year?
Amazing. I was surprised.
So you give any money? Or?
Well, I emptied my pocket and then I ran out of money because everybody wants money where you're walking on the street. And this is a big change from last year. It's just 1 year. There wasn't hardly anyone. But now I talked to a number of guys there and it's okay with me. I can run fast. But if you're here coming to California, you're coming to San Francisco with families, you're elderly, and you can't go out in Union Square in the middle of San Francisco at night. The leaders have a challenge to do something here. I don't know the background about it, but...
For this, as an observer, as a visiting tourist.
Yeah, and this is a clear message to any leader in San Francisco. I mean, what is happening?
Do they seem more desperate?
The people on the streets?
They're the ones that you had contact with.
It was actually scary. The other night I was catching up with a great friend here, Johan Ernst Nilsson, an explorer who's here. He's going to give the keynote speech to Facebook tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah. So I was catching up with him, and it was really scary. I had to go around a couple of blocks because I didn't actually dare to go through a couple of passages.
Mm. And the reason you didn't dare is because you saw a lot of people that seemed dangerous there.
Yeah, it was very loud. Screaming, shouting. The cops were there. Cops. Yeah,
sorry. The police. It was a full-blown incident.
I don't know.
Yeah,
this is. But I'm just a witness. I'm just telling what I saw.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Well, maybe if we had better living conditions for everyone, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, there really is a deplorable lack of conversation about the economic stratus in the country and the need to include all people. There's this kind of drone of people about the market and statistics that mean nothing to real people about the jobless rate. So the people who are speaking to us in the news are not speaking a language that is including people and their daily lives at all. Why is that? Well, there's something very dysfunctional about our country that way.
But cheap, affordable housing. Sweden have any answers there?
Oh, yeah. We have, I mentioned EcoCycle Design, but I know several projects now where we're working with like the IKEA type model, where we produce wooden energy efficient houses that are supposed to, you can package them like modules in containers and you can ship them. And look at the market in Africa, it's going to grow 800 million cities to 2035. Look at China, you have sort of the same, still the same numbers.
So these are cheap. I mean, how, what do they cost for a comfortable family of five? And I guess a Western country would be more expensive than an African, you know, to build that. But what are we talking about? Is it, because we're paying a fortune here for housing. You know, $500,000 is not unusual in Santa Cruz for a normal four-person, five-person family. So if you can...
That means that a person is going to be spending $1,000 a month for 40 years of their life just to pay before the interest. Yeah. You know?
I'd say it'd be a breakthrough was $50,000 or less, if that was possible.
I'm glad you brought it up. It's if you look at an example, you have one company who's working and have, I'd say, one of the world's best construction concepts. They build houses on recycled glass. And you said 400,000 for a house for four people?
Easily.
Minimum.
In Santa Cruz, yeah.
Minimum.
I would say we had sort of the same prices in Sweden, yeah. But house prices have been going up. I mean, and how long time can they go up? Important when your house is low maintenance and low running and long lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So with this house, this is like a four people house home that's mm-hmm. newly built in with Collium. Mm-hmm. And it's fully with the foundation, the floors, the walls, and the roofs is built of recycled glass.
Mm-hmm.
It consumes 5,500 kilowatt hours per year, but it produces 6,500.
You mean it has its own power generation, like solar panels on
the
roof and stuff?
Yeah, uh-huh. So it's a plus house.
Wow.
And they should be perfect
fit
here.
A plus house. That's cool.
Yeah, they should be perfect fit here in California.
Could be, although I think that most houses here use more than 10 kilowatt hours a year. I think they're zoned for 20.
No. All right. Okay. Yeah, that's something.
The new power just demands are less. Actually, all the technologies is less power than ever.
Yeah.
You know, now they've got rid of tubes and stuff.
You ask how much it costs.
Yeah, that's the main.
It's always the local conditions.
Right.
Yeah. Who's important. Sure. So you need to look at what's the local conditions for every market.
Yeah, and every market has its ecosystem for prices, and also codes. One of the big things here, they're very upset about it when people create a granny unit on their house. That's not cool to the government, but lots of people do it anyway because they need to.
Yeah.
So it's very controlled here. There's not a lot of extra space unless we figure out how to use barren land for housing or be able to move housing into cheap land neighborhoods. I guess that could be a possible future. But here we also have a lot of protection, probably you do in Sweden as well, where you have a lot of environmental rules about things.
Yeah, in Sweden we started very early, 92, with carbon dioxide tax.
Right. So you're probably pretty advanced in that respect.
Yeah, we started early, and as I said, the nature has been sort of the driver as well for Sweden. And today is... Sweden today this year, we will come up to 50% renewable on the energy side.
50% of all the energy that
a
house
will be renewable
generates
in Sweden.
Who is taxed for the carbon tax in Sweden?
They issued certificates.
Hmm. Okay, so...
Yeah. So that's been a system that worked great.
Is it a business gets taxed? Is it an individual with a car? How is it managed?
You have all range sorts of taxes from all the way from private to car, traffic, houses.
Well, is it managed like when someone buys gasoline, there's a carbon tax included, or is it measured some other way?
Well, Sweden has probably one of the more advanced taxing systems. You know, we have the second highest tax outtake in the world after Denmark.
Now, if you were a state...
40% or something or more?
40, my God.
Is it
God.
More? Yeah, that would be nice.
I think 46.
You're up to 46. Okay.
46.
But that includes all taxes.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the direct taxes.
Oh, everything but the sales
tax.
Then
you have the GSTs and you have tax on everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're probably be soon taxing on actually... go outside your house?
Well, that's what I understand, is that there's more entrepreneurialism elsewhere because there's so much taxes. But generally, in Europe itself, as a whole, there's less innovation because of taxation and less favorable environments for entrepreneurs. Would you say that's true? Or is that just an American perception?
If you're looking on Europe and Swedish numbers, Sweden is ranked very high in creativity and innovation.
And lifestyle.
Lifestyle. When it comes to sales, marketing, packaging, and that, I think we're a little bit lower. If looking on lifestyle, and that's a sort of a result of Sweden's really world record in welfare building a society.
Right. There's a bottom line that's pretty high. So you have less homeless than we do here.
Well, Sweden started 1862. Sweden was the poorest country in Europe.
1862. That's that recently.
Yeah. So we're sort of in 100 years, we came up to fourth place. 1972.
Was there a new leader that suddenly changed things around?
Well, 2 million Swedes actually went to America in the 1860s and 70s.
They left?
Yeah. They came here to Minnesota.
I think my relatives.
Yeah, it could be.
1880s.
Yeah. And then Sweden actually made their boldest and most daring move and decision. They borrowed money in Europe to invest in infrastructure. They built the railway and started the journey of the
You mean those that were still in Sweden after the mass exodus? The ones that borrowed money from Europe were the ones that were left, that stayed behind and decided to improve the homeland?
Yeah, it was sort of a evolutionary industrial growth explosion.
That's true. You had the whole industrial revolution happening then, too.
Anyway. We've been very fortunate being out of major conflicts since the Vikings.
That's the other thing, the neutrality. How did you manage to keep neutrality through all this? Is that intentional?
We've been fairly busy, I guess, building up Sweden as a country, an industry.
Okay, well, we'll be back with Lars Ling on clean tech and related topics after the break. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Fushu Show with Mrs. Future and Lars Ling, clean tech networker expert from Sweden. Now, we were just discussing a couple of things off the air here.
Yeah, it was a really interesting segue here where Lars was describing how Sweden went from being the poorest country in Europe in the 1880s to 100 years later being one of the better off countries. And you were about to explain that process and the need to invest.
Yeah, how it all ties into clean tech.
Well, everything is clean tech from my point of view.
Okay.
And
okay.
It starts with us as individuals, how we live and what we do. But practically, if you want to build a welfare society, you need to finance it. Mm-hmm. And you do that, you need to have real companies that produce products and services that someone is buying. And when you have real companies, you create jobs. So clean tech is jobs.
So in Sweden, a welfare society means people all have jobs.
Not all people have jobs. We have like 8% unemployed rate, but that's still far better than 30% in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And look at Greece.
But you use the word welfare as a meaning with well-being. Like you have a society that values the well-being of the individual and the household.
Yeah, here it's kind of a derogatory term. Oh, there's a welfare bum. things like
somebody
that.
Somebody who's too lazy to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so maybe it's different. Maybe it differs.
Yes.
But if I phrase it like a...
It has a negative connotation here.
A democratic society, then.
Yeah.
Or a good democracy where you have health care, you would have education. Mm-hmm. That's where it's. But if you want to build a society like that, you need to finance that.
Right.
How are you going to pay for that? And
do you have problems with jobs going to China?
Practically, I mean, all countries around the world, we have actually outsourced all production to China. That's what we've
done. That's happened. Well, that's what's going on a planetary scale then.
Yeah, that happens. And now we're sort of leaving where are we going from here? Where look at China now. I mean, they are putting forward really impressive growth numbers, but no one knows really if they're real.
Mm-hmm.
They are sort of really, if you look at all the developed countries like United States, Sweden and other countries, we've been very good role models how you have developed democracies with great welfare. And now we're sort of in a paradigm shift towards the next shift maybe if you talk about in terms of evolutionary ideas, the fifth wave where you had the industrial evolution.
The post-industrial evolution.
Yeah, so now
information society.
Where we're heading now. You know, you have never had so many democracies in the world. You have never had so many opportunities for people to be educated and well-known with information sharing with internet and new technology. So there's a different ball game as well today. But it's important that we continue, if we want to have growth and have welfare societies, which we all want. We want to be, do, and have. You know, we want to be thin, rich, and happy, don't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my
goal. And travel.
That's my goal, right? Yeah.
So how can we do that here? Do you have some in Sweden that we can use here?
Yeah, you got some easy answers for us?
Yeah, you have to eat your oat. In the morning, you have to go to school or work.
We have to work hard. We have to have the work ethic.
Well, I'm not joking there.
This is a beach town, you know.
If you want to receive something, I mean, you need to put in. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Some senses you can say we're a little bit spoiled in the welfare countries today where we governments and everything is organizing things for us.
Yeah. Well, we don't have quite that much faith in our government, generally speaking.
No, that's true. So it's always the politicians, right?
Well, it seems to be a stumbling block. Let's put it that way. It seems to slow things down. It's like a some kind of timing adjustment to make sure things don't happen too fast.
Yeah.
But I do think that it can evolve. I see the internet as some kind of species nervous system, for example, that's connecting us up on a more organic manner.
Yeah.
That is bringing together minds that need to know each other.
Yeah.
So that bigger things can happen, so that we can operate more as a species than as even nation states.
Yeah. You know? There's one thing that I want to investigate. I got this newsletter the other day, and that's that the VCs here in Silicon Valley now, the investors, the big ones.
Yes.
Now they're going into locally organic produced food.
Right. Big here. Big here. Organic farmers are big in Santa Cruz.
What is that?
What is locally organically produced food?
Yeah, I know, but you know that the VCs now are going into that. Isn't that a sign?
Oh, well, it's the new cottage industry because people like knowing who grew their food so that they can know whether or not it's trustworthy. Also, the trend for VCs has been to invest more broadly, to invest smaller amounts in more and more companies. And the new model for farming is, it's called CSA, Consumer Subscription Agriculture, so that the customers, instead of being a store that then resells it to individuals, the customers are actually the people who eat the food, and they invest in the farmer, and they give the farmer enough money to offset the risk of their crop. And it's sort of like they pay in advance for the food that the farmer is going to grow for them. And so that model of small investments in small companies who have a very close relationship with their customer works very well for spreading agricultural sustainability.
I think it's great. I think it's great. Coming back again to the reason why I'm here is that I think we have a lot to learn from each other, from the United States and Sweden. And as I said, we're good on innovation, creativity. We've done a lot of good things, and we have a lot of experience and ideas that we want to share. But I think we need, if we can work together, I think we can do a lot more good projects.
Now, what level are you working on? Are you working on person-to-person or business-to-business or business-to-government, as a connector for the companies and people here and there? Where would you say a little bit of all of the above?
A little bit of all of the above.
Okay. Fair enough.
But it's,
fair enough.
You need to work on, because this education and information is key, and that's on all the levels that you mentioned, policymakers, investors, science, and the young generation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the young generation is the most important, because their concerns is job and environment. So job creation for the young generation, that's what clean tech is about. Create jobs for the young generation.
Right.
What have you been finding with the kids? There's been a lot of interest in clean tech?
Yeah, and there's been multiple surveys asking the young generation, what's your biggest concern today? And that is the environment and jobs. And they have a high level of awareness. And, you know, who is telling the parents at home, no, mom, don't throw in the bin, we're going to recycle and sort. So to starting very early ages and educate kids in school.
Yes. No, throw that away. I need it for my 3D printer.
Yeah,
it's an interesting shift here. So who are you finding yourself talking to so far on this trip?
I started it just not on the bin on the West Coast. I started in New York. So it was an Advanced Energy Conference.
Advanced Energy Conference, just about the future of energy itself?
Yeah, because energy, food, and water is the major opportunities and challenges. So advanced energy, how can we sort of increase the efficiency out of how we're actually producing energy today? Can we be more efficient in also find better energy-saving appliances?
What was the most interesting thing you heard there?
Some good examples is there was actually a Swedish company there.
Oh, yeah? That you knew to you?
No, I'm familiar with them. They have some examples where you have based on like power stations, and where we will feed energy to like smaller suburbs or whatever you want to call, where you can get much more efficiency at a lower cost by technology. that company, Sustainable Innovations, and from Sweden, have done a lot of projects in areas, in suburbs in Sweden. So they were there to also asking and finding partners with the universities in U.S. That's another result.
Yeah, I wasn't asking that. You're cross-pollinating the new university and in world with the entrepreneurs and business world.
Yeah. Then I've been in San Diego, and it's an event coming up. I visited the Sweden American Chamber of Commerce. I was invited as a speaker, presenter. They had something called Green Connections event. And in November, there will be an event between Sweden and U.S., cross-pollination. So anyone interested in participating in that, we will be matchmaking Swedish and American companies. And now I'm here, so I'm doing the same thing here. San Francisco, and it's a great, a lot of interest here.
Mm-hmm. And we know you through the great networker Bruce Erickson, who recently discovered his Swedish heritage and traveling there. How did you meet Bruce?
Oh,
he was on our guest 2 weeks ago, by the way, folks.
It was through the magazines, can you believe?
The magazines?
Yeah, the Green Solutions magazines has been great. He picked up that somewhere, and I think it was through the connections with Günter Pauli. And Bruce contacted me, and I said, wow, this is great. Lars, I'm coming to Sweden. Can we meet? And he was in Sweden, and we couldn't meet at the time. But last year when I was here, we met. And we have had an ongoing contact since then.
Yeah, Bruce is what I call a meta-networker. He knows a lot of other networkers, and that connects in another layer.
He's amazing.
Things can happen really fast.
He's amazing.
Bruce.
Yeah, and it's thanks to Bruce I'm here now.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
See, that's so people creating the matrix here.
It's the network.
Yeah, the network of human people, that's interestingly enough, not the machines.
Well, human
alone.
People with ideas that connect them to each other. I think it takes a very special kind of person to be thinking about how to make the future better and how to make the future better by being intelligent with our tools, with our technology, by embracing things that aren't about making the most money right away. They're about making the most money in the long term by wasting less, by having a better solution to a problem that serves more people for a longer time with less pollution. It's sort of not the normal talk about how much money do you have in your pocket, how much money can you throw at the problem, and who's going to win, which is really, unfortunately, the level of most of these conversations that are in the media today. There are not a lot of conversations in the media about which solution is the best, which solution is the most ethical, which solution is going to serve the greatest good.
Well, we're starting to talk about it now, I think. Yeah, it's about time. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, don't want to interrupt you, Mrs. Future, but we only have a few minutes left here, and I wanted to get Lars to tell us about how we can really maximize our connections with each other at this point. Are you looking for specific companies or types of people at this point? Are there opportunities you can turn on people here too?
Particularly in water, energy, and food. I have a couple of assignments with me from Sweden, from the IVL, Swedish Environmental Institute, Stockholm Cleantech. That is actually cluster and matchmake clusters in water, food, and energy together. Mm-hmm. So that's really specific. Mm-hmm. That would be something that would be really interesting.
Okay. So we're looking for companies who would like to share ideas about green technology that would benefit local populations in the way that they create their resources in water, food, and energy.
That would be great. And to find great companies, organizations, distributors here in the United States so we can start collaborate and find projects.
And you have like 50 technologies that could use distribution here, but that you think could be applied to American issues and that you mentioned at least in one article here, hot Swedish 50 companies that will change the world. That we should know about them, and you know, maybe they can, we can create some cross-pollination.
Yeah, let's give our listeners some online access to your
Where can they find about
how
these?
How can we get them plugged into you through the internet? Yeah.
Okay, well, they can go on to cleantechregion.com /inspiration, and you will come directly to the Green Solutions magazines online.
Okay, so that's greentechsolutions.com. Let me get the
cleantechregion.com.
Cleantech Region, cleantechregion.com.
Yeah,
that'll get you started.
Yeah,
and email.
It's info@cleantechregion.com.
Info. This is a magazine that you started.
Yeah.
Right? Then you pull together of resources and people that are involved with clean tech worldwide.
Yeah.
With focus on Sweden.
I wanted to put together some great inspirational tool to actually share those ideas. And that was the Green Solutions magazine. So started in 2009.
Gotcha. And this is volume 5.
Yeah, number 5. It's distributed now in 97 countries. And through last year, IDG Group actually acquired.
Yeah, International Data Group, I had my first job with them at the InfoWorld.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Pat McGovern, he owns like hundreds of magazines worldwide. He bought you, huh?
He bought me, yeah.
Yeah. He's got the largest private intelligence network on the planet, by the way. Well, anyway, that's, thanks for being on the show this week, Lars.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
All right. Okay.
Okay, folks, that was another week of the Dr. Future Show on KSEO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Santa Fe, Monterey.